It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here. Kelly Gamont is here. Andy Inutko is here. We're going to talk about the latest Apple news. And is it really true that when you stick a pen in a Galaxy Note 5, it gets stuck if you stick it in the wrong way? I'll find out a little later on. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 469, recorded Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. You're inserting it wrong. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by JackThreads.com. JackThreads provides a stress-free way to shop a curated selection of men's clothes at a great price. For 20% off your first order, visit jackthreads.com/MacBreak and enter the code MacBreak at checkout. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service that's the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/MacBreak to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/MacBreak. And by LegalZoom. Protect your family with a last will or living trust today. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW in the referral box at checkout for your special discount. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple with some of the best Apple pundits in the business. Let's welcome once again back to our shores. I don't know where she's been. Kelly Guimont. Hello, Kelly.
Hi.
Welcome back to our shores.
I didn't realize I'd been anywhere interesting that required navigation of shores.
Yes.
So,
well,
awesome.
If you haven't been anywhere, we're glad to have you back to the studio.
MacObserver.com. Well, I was at App Camp.
You were? That's right. How'd that go?
The actual, it was phenomenal. Oh, we did two sessions here, one in July and one in August, and they were both really great. The teams were super creative. The apps are awesome. Having switched everything to Swift is stupendous.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, this year we finally converted everything over, and it basically gives us like an extra day of camp. Because there's so much less stuff we have to explain and it's so much more human readable.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's really great. So they get more time to work on their pitches. They get more time to work on their buttons because button making is an important piece. And it was great.
I used to go to camp to make buttons, but it was a different kind of button. Kelly, was last time you were here, you talked about App Camp for Girls. And we're so glad that it went well this year. That's great. Which one are you at?
Portland. I help out with the two sessions in Portland. And then this year, we were in Vancouver for the first time. We are officially the App Camp for Girls Society of Canada. We're an actual nonprofit there. And we did the first year this summer in Vancouver. And then we had our second camp. We did one last year and we'll do one. We did one this year in Seattle. And we've got the two here in Portland and we're looking to expand.
Nice. So, what's the URL?
It is appcamp4girls.com.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy peasy. From Montreal, it's René Richer from Amour.com. Hello, Montreal.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing today?
Ah, ça va bien. Et tu?
Ah, ça va magnifique.
Thank you so much. And from Baston, Andy Inutko.
Sorry about that, Mike. My camera seems to have frozen at this end. I can still see you guys. I might have to unplug the camera and plug it back in again. Until then, you can just assume that the force wave of the nuclear attack from North Korea started in Boston. It's on your way there. I've got just a few more seconds to say, I regret nothing.
Andy is a tiny little piece of gray goo now.
This way.
I'm just going to go do that unplug and plug back
in. Yeah, why don't
in.
You go ahead and do that? Yeah.
That might be for the best.
So, all right, while Andy's doing that, because I know he uses an Android phone, of course, we believe, coming soon to a pocket near you, the new iPhone. I think because they do it every year at this time, it's pretty credible they would do it
Wednesday, September 9th, not Tuesday because of Labor Day. They like to give the...
I mean, they work Labor Day, but I mean, whether the venue has access and whether media can get there on Labor Day, it's
It's better
easier.
To do it the day after. Yeah. The day after. Of course, people publish this as if breaking news. iPhone will be up for pre-order on the 11th, the following Friday. As always, iPhone will deliver the following Friday, the 18th. Anything that contradicts those numbers, those dates?
No. I mean, as far as I know, it's almost like WWDC now, where it's going to be that week every year unless there's a significant reason to change it. And Apple can always change it. But looking back 3-4 years now, they've done the event the same week. They've done the release of iOS the same day, the release of the phone the same day.
Do you use a 6 or a 6 Plus?
I have both. I'm 99% of the time I use a 6 Plus.
Okay. Kelly?
I rock the 5S.
5S. She's living in the past. So I'm going to obviously get the new iPhone. And I, this time around, decided to get the 6, not the 6 Plus, because it looked like the 6 Plus increased resolution but didn't increase the amount of data. In other words, applications just blew things up instead of taking advantage of more dots. But
they
over time, that changed, I presume. So that's my question for you, because you know I like a big phone. I cannot lie. But I'm wondering if I should get a 6 or 6 Plus or 6S.
They have two modes. Both the 6 and the 6S can run in an accessibility mode that takes the amount of pixels from the previous size phone and just blows them up.
That I don't want.
Yeah, so that is just because some people, you know, they do want that.
Makes
so you can just have
see,
everything bigger.
Yeah,
absolutely. But the iPhone 6 added a bunch of pixels, and the iPhone 6 Plus added even more. The iPhone 6 Plus is 1080p. Apps had to update to support that. Apple made this thing called adaptivity last year, which basically is almost like adaptive design or scalable web content design, where you can pin things to locations and not be pixel perfect anymore. But apps had to update to support it. As a benefit with iOS 9 now, if you did do the adaptive design and you use size classes and you used auto layout, you get all the multitasking stuff as well. So they're really trying to push this idea of making your apps disconnect from the device so that they're sort of a more of a logical framework and less of a pixel painting.
Has that resulted in apps that use the real estate intelligently? In other words, I don't want something blown up like that, the accessibility case. I want to see more stuff on the screen because I got more dots.
It seemed
to me initially that wasn't really the case. It was just everything was bigger.
Yeah, I mean, and their apps, usually it's the same suspects. It's the banking apps. It's apps that go to a web end that requires some sort of secure infrastructure they probably built in COBOL and have no intention of ever updating.
So Safari, for instance, probably gets more text on the screen, right?
Yeah, Safari does. If you turn it sideways on an iPhone 6. The biggest thing about the iPhone 6 Plus is if you turn it sideways, it switches to an iPad view, so you have multi-column layouts. So you get the split view controller. You have the table on one side and the content on the other.
Does it seem unlikely that they would change the screen resolution for this iteration?
They've never done it for an S-class device before. Both the 3GS, the 4S, and the 5S were all the same screens as the previous screen resolutions as the previous generation.
But as we've said many times before, better camera. Everybody's kind of getting excited about the camera.
We should point out, Leo, internally, the iPhone 6 Plus is a 3X display. It scales down to 1080p because that's what the screen is. But with almost no effort, Apple could put a 3X display in there.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So it's just because they've never done it before doesn't mean they won't do it this time. Generally, though, you don't see... but actually, you do see changes in hardware because we're going to see a new camera, a new A9 chip, probably. So it wouldn't be inconceivable that they'd put a higher res screen in there.
No, I mean, as far as I know, it was because there are larger screens. There are the 4K the 2K displays already.
They kill the freaking battery.
They do. And the yield, when you make devices that aren't, that you don't make that many devices, it's easy. When you want to use specific technologies, it's easy. Apple couldn't get yield for larger screens, so they went with 1080p. Right. So if they can do that for a higher screen, we'll see that as soon as it's feasible.
That's possible. Force touch, of course. I'm most interested in the bigger camera. And OIS right now is only in the 6 Plus. Do you think that'll migrate down to the 6? Or is that bump going to be the issue?
They both have the bump. And I mean, like, if we don't like it, you can imagine what Johnny Ive thinks every time he looks at that thing. So if they could have done anything else, they would have. But cameras like Z-Index, they really want to have depth to them in order to produce good pictures.
Right.
So it's why a lot of phones now have bumps on the back.
Right. Yeah. Almost all of them do.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see that change, too. You hate to see them make a choice for style and sacrificing a great feature. And optical image stabilization is just such a killer solution for a lot of problems.
I'd love to see it migrate down to the 6. All right. I think you've pushed me. I'm going to go with the whatever they designate it, the 6S Plus, the bigger of the two. Do we know anything about ordering? Is it going to be a constrained supply? And one analyst say they're making 25 to 40 million of these now.
It's so funny, Leo. Every year it's delayed, but it's not going to affect release date. Well, then why do I care? That makes...
They're making... But this time, they're going to make a lot of them.
Yes.
Every time.
But they're making...
They make a ton, and then they run out immediately, and then they make a ton more. And that's... See also money. And that's always how it's been. It's just whatever the number is, it's never enough for all the people who are waiting in line. But I think that this may be nearing the end of that, sort of, in that a lot of mobile providers are getting rid of the 2-year subsidy situation, where you could maybe pay it off sooner. And then a lot of people who are on 2-year contracts and subsidizing their phones won't be doing it every year. I think maybe it'll even out a little bit, and there will be slightly different demand once anybody that wants to can get one every year, as they move to more like lease programs and things like that with I think it's Jump and like New Phone Forever or whatever it is that T-Mobile
everybody's doing it now. Sprint's doing it, Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T. Yeah. We're still waiting to see them drop the contract in the 2-year extension. But all
Which
of them, including AT&T, have this, you know, pay us a little more, you can get a new phone whenever.
Mm-hmm. So I think that might change the initial demand, because people will sort of get them whenever they can walk in and get one, and then it will just sort of be divided up into the people who feel like they have to have one 0 day, and then the people who are waiting. You know, like I can wait a month or two till I can just walk in and buy exactly the one that I want.
It'd be really interesting to see if this new plan T-Mobile and Verizon have, which is you just pay a flat $15 a month and you'll get, and then get the new phone. If this will spur sales of the 6S, because somebody in the chat room posited, and I think this might be true, that maybe we're entering that iPad phase where people like you, Kelly, go, I don't really need the new phone. I'll keep it as long as I can. On the other hand, if it doesn't cost you anything more, if you're paying $15 a month anyway, maybe you will just always get the new phone. What do you think, Renee?
I think that's why we're seeing all the carriers say, I think Sprint is doing this as well. I'm not sure how it'll play internationally, because they didn't have the contracts to begin with. But people need phones. Phones is almost like the one excuse you give yourself to splurge on consumer electronics. And it's not just iPhones. People want the latest Galaxy phone sometimes too, or they want, you know, some people want the new Nexus. It depends on whatever you like most. And I think it skews towards those early adopter type personalities. Apple's done a lot to kind of discourage that. They've made appointments last year, so you didn't have to wait in line overnight. And they've done a lot of things to sort of lessen the hype surrounding it, which is kind of odd, because you'd think the hype was beneficial to them in terms of marketing. But it turned out not to be a great user experience. And with the watches, they did that entire sort of try-on period. So they're experimenting more. But I think there will always be traditional demand. And the thing that we pay a lot of attention to, getting the new phone, but some people like Kelly are on 5S's, some are on 5s. 4S's, they've been waiting until now to do the update. They're on that 2-year or 3-year contract, or they wanted to make sure they got a lot of years after their phone and they're ready for this one. I think Tim Cook said 22 or 27% of people had upgraded already. And that's still a massive amount of people left to upgrade this year.
Yeah, there's also you could also ask the question if it's in Apple's best interest to have everybody wanting to buy the phone at the exact same time. That if there was a time when really getting people just super super keyed up to be there on the first day to buy the phone, that was when the iPhone before it was a really 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 huge success. Now maybe it makes sense for them to say it's no longer in our best interest to have most of the, so many of the sales we're going to make made in the first couple of weeks. If we can get people simply to be, think it's okay to wait a month or two or three or four and spread things out so that we don't have to have this, you know, 8 container ships worth of phones hitting the shores on the exact same week. And also make sure that we'll basically be making money off of more money off the phones from quarter to quarter to quarter instead of having a spike and then having to explain why we didn't sell quite so many in the first quarter.
I mean, they'll get punished for it, though. They'll be, oh, Apple didn't sell that many on opening week. Oh, there weren't lineups. There wasn't demand. They didn't sell out. Ooh, tisk, tisk, tisk.
Doomed.
It's best just to put the dull banana idiot sticker on those people's foreheads and then just stop talking to them.
So we'll do what we're going to do next week, and I should clear this with those of you who will be around, which I don't think, Andy, you will be, is move. In fact, now you won't be, I know, Andy. Move MacBreak Weekly from its normal slot Tuesday to Wednesday right after the Apple event, and then move Windows Weekly back to Tuesday.
Not next week, but the week after,
2 weeks
right?
from now, yeah. 2 weeks hence. So we will do live coverage. I mean, I'm just making this up since we haven't seen invites yet. 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time at on the 9th of September, which is a Wednesday. And then immediately after that, we'll do a special Mac Break Weekly. Yeah.
You can help me out a lot by committing like the reservation money for like an actual suite for you for Wednesday, because that would make sure it would not happen on Wednesday and I could still do the show.
Yeah, right. I actually will not be there. We're going to New York for the IAB upfronts, I think, which are some crazy ad thing. So this is the first time I've missed an Apple event ever in my whole life. No, wait a minute. Since the 2001 iPod announcement. I missed that one. Mm. So 14 years. So I'm sad about that, but I'll be listening in. I think we're meeting with Squarespace right about that time. So I'll be that kid with the transistor radio and the headphone in going, what? Yeah. Oh, my ass. Whoa.
They will make a phone, Leo. They're not dropping the mic. They're not going out of business. They're not going to switch to hot tubs. They will make another phone.
I think that's
probably
the case.
Probably next year, too.
I think that's the case. I think we can count on it. iOS 9 will come out. Will watchOS also come out then?
They work together. So, okay. I mean, Apple hasn't said anything, but they're so tightly entwined, you basically run the watch off the phone. Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense.
And, of course, we're expecting, unusually this time, perhaps new iPads.
I think not. You think not now? No.
Not until October, I don't think.
So Pachkowski got it wrong.
It's hard. I mean, it's a moving target.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, never predict anything.
Apple may not know at this point.
Yeah. I mean, right? You already have a really heavily packed September event as it is. If we're just talking about new iPhones and we're just talking about watchOS, it feels like if they're going to make a big move with the iPad, they're going to want an entire entire event around it. Maybe not something as big as Yerba Buena, but maybe something like town hall size. But enough time that they can really unpack this. And I'm hoping that it will be a larger iPad. I'm hoping that it will be not just here is this year's iPad, but here is our plan for the next 2, 3, or 4 years of iPad, even if they're not explicitly saying that.
Right.
We should have Apple TV, though. I mean, so that'll be a chocolate.
That's right. That'll be part of it. Yeah, that makes sense. That's plenty.
I really want that to be the one more thing. I want it so, so, so badly. Like Gene Munster levels of badly. That I keep banging the Apple TV drum and I seem to be.
But now, Gene want an Apple television set? You're not asking for that, Kelly.
No. But right. I feel like him because I keep going, this one's going to be the one, you guys, I really, really mean it this time. And then, no. So I've been waiting like a year and a half to get a new Apple TV. And I've been waiting since the Dub keynote last year to get the new Apple TV that will do all of the HomeKit stuff because I'm a home automation person and I can do all that stuff with my phone. And I would really rather be able to do it with an Apple TV because then it might be something I could actually recommend to other people whose idea of a good time is not mucking around with configuration files so that you can unlock things with your phone and make the sprinklers go on at a specific time every day.
I think it's kind of intriguing that as the Apple TV has been delayed, it's given Google an opportunity to put out a router that really is going to be the hub for their home automation efforts, the OnHub router, which immediately sold out, almost instantly sold out, for $200, so twice as much as an Apple TV. This router is ostensibly just a very nice Wi-Fi router, but in fact has Zigbee built into it, 802.15.4, has Weave, which is Google's Internet of Things networking system, and Brillo, Google's operating system for home automation, all built into it. So it's kind of a stealth device. Microsoft, yeah, too, is kind of adding, I think, those kinds of features to Xbox, but hasn't really got there. And, of course, Amazon with the Echo is clearly making a move in that direction. They just added SmartThings integration. So it's really interesting to watch as the giants
home in on this. I was disappointed when I saw the picture in the press release before I actually started reading about it. And I saw what looked to be a speaker grill at the top of it, which is which is actually for their ultrasonic digital connection configuration.
I had the same reaction, which is
and I was thinking, oh man, if I can get Google now, I can get access to Alexa.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That is the fastest $200 I'd ever spent.
Yeah.
Everybody's.
It's so cool that everybody's building these little tiny little towers that are always on network computers that will just be standing someplace pretty in your living room doing awesome things for you.
And both Amazon and Google, and I guess you could even make this case for Apple, are making these devices do something else because home automation isn't there yet.
Yeah.
So it's an excuse to, you know, oh, well, I would like a Wi-Fi router that worked. So they're really focusing on that, but really that's what's...
I have the Apple Tower, and I thought I could just leave it out like all those pictures, but the minute you start plugging everything into
all those
it...
wires.
Yeah. It's like that picture of the Mac Pro with 30 things attached to it.
Over. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but I've got, you know, even here, as I scrambled to unplug and replug back in my camera, I had to go and plug my Ethernet into my MacBook here for have my notes on, and I just was reminding myself that as soon as this new Google router comes in, I'm going to run. I've got copper running through the house, but I'm going to use this as an extender Wi-Fi base station from someplace else. Maybe that's the reason why it doesn't have all the ports of an AirPort Extreme. It really is just one Ethernet port, one USB port. You can run. A lot of people will run copper to the living room because they've already got a Roku and they've already got boxes. Maybe they've done that already. And if they just use it as an extender for a larger house or even as the primary contact for a small house, the fact that you've got this thing that isn't tucked away, it's not on a shelf in the least used room of the house, it is something you're actually looking at and interacting with. That it's the ability to have a presence in the house as opposed to simply projecting features into the house that will get people to think, hey, I've got a lot of Google stuff that I use versus I got a lot of Apple stuff and I've got a lot of Amazon stuff.
I would hope. Unfortunately, of course, these will all be, certainly Apple's will be proprietary. I would guess Amazon's will be too. Google's maybe not.
Proprietary how?
Well, in the sense that what you really want is a hub that speaks to all. I would love it to work with HomeKit.
CarPlay and Android Auto, where as long as they support many different protocols, you don't care if the protocol is proprietary,
you think Apple will do that? You think Apple will Apple create its own protocol?
But it won't matter because Apple doesn't make accessories. All Apple's going to do is provide HomeKit so that any provider who wants to, like Elgato, can make HomeKit compatible, but they can add Android compatibility too.
Right.
So it'll be literally like getting the car where Android Auto and CarPlay are just both on it.
Okay, that's reassuring.
But
that's
let me tell
hope.
You about. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Let me tell you about an idea I had that I want to, because you can write apps for Alexa. I want them to add just sort of like a feature called Concierge, where you can say I will not speak the command because a lot of people get annoyed when you speak voice commands. So I'm going to say hey Adrian, turn on the lights in the kitchen, and it will come back. I'm sorry, I don't know how to do that. But your Apple TV does, and then Alexa says, "Hey Shlomo, turn on the lights upstairs."
Wouldn't that be awesome?
And it happens. That's what I would love to. It would be so cool.
They won't need us anymore, Andy. They'll just be able to get rid of us.
They can just talk amongst themselves.
I can sleep in on a Tuesday.
Except all this. What's all this chatter going on downstairs?
The Andy unit is a waste of resources. Put it away.
Eliminate Andy unit. What I found out, of course, was that Google's not making this on Hub, but a Chinese company called TP-Link is, and they're not hiding it. There is their front page, Meet on Hub from Google TP-Link. So what I immediately did, because I use an AirPort Extreme, and what I did is I took the new AirPort Extreme and then tried to extend it with an AirPort Express in the gym and an old AirPort Extreme in my office. And it works great, but it wonks out fairly frequently. I have to reboot everything, and it's a real pain in the butt. And, well, frankly, my wife's killing me over this. So I thought, well, if I'm going to get the on hub, why don't I get some TP-Link extenders? And then I saw that they have power line adapters that plug into the wall and then use the grid inside the house as Ethernet wiring. So I don't know. I'm kind of preparing for something that doesn't exist yet. The on hub is like delayed forever. But so I put I have now an AirPort Extreme in the living room, and plugged into it, and then into the wall is a TP-Link a power line adapter. And then in the gym, which is maybe 100 feet away, I have the other end of that with its own Wi-Fi. So I have different – now I don't have one network all over the place. I have three different networks, one in my office, one in the gym, and one in the living room. But it does work. But, boy, I feel like it's a massive kludge. But Powerline does work. Not as fast as Ethernet.
Yeah.
But I'm getting 20 megabits up and down.
And no holes in the wall.
Yeah. So, I was really reluctant to try this stuff. And when it first came out years ago, I did, and it was terrible. So I've been kind of reluctant to do it since then. But it works fine. And, it was easy. It couldn't be easier. Plug it into the wall. So, anyway, I don't know why I brought that up.
Nothing's simpler than just biting the bullet and running some copper.
Well, that's what I should do, is put Ethernet in every room.
And it's like if you want to be fancy schmancy about it, you can just tack it against the wall. And it won't get in the way. If you want to do a cable drop, assuming you own your own house, that's one of the easiest things in the world to do, because unlike putting in an electrical box, you don't need a license to do it. You just literally just drop cable and it works, and you can get really nice cover outlets for it. It is a massive pain in the butt. It's a Saturday afternoon project, but once you are in a position where every place you're likely to benefit from high-speed internet, you can actually just plug into a wall and get it there. Every time I add a new switch to my network, it's like, why? It's like this situation over here. For some reason, I used to be able to get good Wi-Fi for the laptops. I've always had copper for the podcasting gear, but for some reason now Wi-Fi just will not work. And I've had to like sort of steal Ethernet from another computer I've got over there to run to the table. And just like every other room I've ever done that before, it's like, if I just spend 3 hours solving this problem by putting more copper into this room, that problem goes away forever. And so I think that a lot of people, especially as more people who are renting in their 20s become people who own houses in their late 20s and early 30s, I think we're going to see a lot more people just saying, screw it, we're going to have Cat 6 everywhere.
Yes, certainly if you're building or you're renovating, the smart thing to do would be put conduit in the wall, and one of the wires in there should certainly be Cat 6.
What I'd love to see is if either in an Apple TV or in a future AirPort Extreme update is some sort of nearline, because Apple's doing a lot of nearline stuff now. It'd be super great if they made as part of their router system something that allowed you to stage your iCloud backups locally, even keep encrypted copies locally, something that pulls down iOS updates, watch updates, OS 10 updates, and makes them available to all of the machines. They don't have to update all of them separately anymore. There's just so many interesting things they can do once they have, if they're not afraid to make these devices real devices and have that sort of point of, and I don't know if you want to put everyone one of them into an Apple TV, because maybe that's a $300 Apple TV box, but to at least have some boxes available that will do that kind of stuff, I think it'd be great.
Yeah, and also it's the AirPort Extreme is still one of the easier routers to set up and configure and administrate, but it's still easy compared to networking gear. It's not really easy compared to like consumer gear. So I'm really looking forward to an update either to the software or to the hardware itself, in which it really becomes one of these things where you open an app, and I love the screenshots you see of the phone apps for OnHub. It simply says the network looks good. You've got six devices connected, and here's what they look like. There's still if you have a company with the resources of Apple or Google saying that, okay, I see you've got an Xbox. Do you want this Xbox to be accessible from outside the network? Okay, I know I also know what kind of FiOS router you have right now. I know how to configure this. Give me 10 seconds, I'll have it going for you, which is not something that anything can do right now.
That would be beautiful.
It's the kind of thing you expect Apple to do, although it's kind of hard for Apple. There's so many ways they could improve life. To pick
it's
one.
It's not sexy. It's not something you can have people dancing to in a commercial. Yeah. But it's definitely within their bailiwick of let's just make life suck not so much for people who use our products.
Yeah.
That's the thing that is making me so excited about the automation piece of an Apple TV, is because I really want to be able to extend this to other people who are not people who like to spend all of their time rejiggering stuff on a network. So that's why I keep waiting, is because I want there to be a good customer experience. So if Google can take a crack at it with OnHub and get something decent going, that's great, because then it means Apple has to try and compete with an existing decent user experience that's already out there. Like, individually, you can do good if you only want Hue lights. You can do pretty well with automation if you only want Wemo switches. But as soon as you want to have lights and things that are plugged in, you're kind of out of luck, because you want everything to communicate in one place. And that's just not going to happen, at least not anytime soon. So that's why I'm super excited about having all of this happen, is because I really want to be able to offer that good experience to other people. Because now that my stuff is working, I really enjoy it. I like that when I come home, a light comes on. If it's dark, no matter how long I've been gone, I come home and when I walk into the door from the garage, there's lights on for me. And I like that I don't have to worry about the sprinklers, and that the sprinkler brain is smart enough to know if it rained yesterday that it doesn't have to run the sprinklers today. And I can check at any point and find out if the sprinklers are running. And I like that I have the alarm system all set up, and it, you know, it's automating notifications to my phone. These are all wonderful things, but I don't have the patience to do tech support for any member of my family to help them get set up with this sort of situation. And once it's working, it's really awesome, but I don't have the resources to help anybody else do this until something happens on the administration end of it. So that's the thing that I've been waiting for. That's why I was so excited to see HomeKit, and then nothing. So I really hope
that
changes.
I'm super excited about
soon.
The security, because like the idea of putting, after the Chrysler hack and all these other hacks, the idea of just having all these open access points in my house is chilling. Like yesterday, there was a story about a refrigerator that got hacked for Gmail credentials. And I almost decided to go battle.
Wait a minute. A refrigerator got hacked for Gmail credentials.
Samsung refrigerators were hacked, and people managed to retrieve Gmail credentials from them. I guess they would email you if your milk was low or something.
They
would let you journal from your refrigerator. So they needed your But I want my kitchen to be Battlestar. Like, I just want no air. My kitchen's going to be totally air-gapped. But I like that all these new Wi-Fi chips are becoming secure, and they're going to transit your credentials securely. And that's going to be more important when, like, your door locks are online.
Wow.
That's part of the reason I don't have one.
Oh. It's a sad story, Leo. So I was going to say it's a funny story, but it's not.
Have locks in your door, Kelly. I'm very concerned now.
No. I don't have smart locks. I don't have anything you can run with your phone, because I've seen just enough stuff about how someone with less than pure intentions could possibly gain access to my house if I'm not around, or even if I am, which is kind of worse. And I don't want that to happen. So that's why I don't have those, is because I don't feel like I'm at the point where those are secure enough that they are actually security and not just granting someone access.
It feels like there's kind of a natural evolution of things like these, because first you don't use it because you surmise correctly that this is still very, very new and it hasn't been really failure-proofed yet for all kinds of different definitions of failure-proof. Then you use it because you have been judicious and you understand how it works and you believe in how it works. But then you get to the dangerous phase three, in which you simply trust it to work, and that's when things start to fail, when you decide that, yeah, I'm glad I waited 5 years to get the smart lock, and then 1 year after that, suddenly there are raccoons inside your house because they figured out there's a car fob you can get on Alibaba that is tuned to the wrong frequency, and you didn't turn off something you were supposed to turn off when you configured it because you simply trusted it to work.
Right.
Let's take a break. Come back and talk some more with this fabulous group, Kelly Guimont from Mac Observer. She is the Mac Observer, observing a Mac right now. I bet
she's forbidden to interfere. She is only an observer.
Are you wearing UN blue? Also from iMore.com. He's not an observer. He's got his hands right in it. By the way, congratulations on the new book.
Oh, thank you.
Apple Music. Serenity Caldwell, a lot of it, but it's by the editors of iMore, and you can find it on iBooks. Really nice. Beautiful.
Well, thank you.
And Mr. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times, who you didn't think I noticed, but moments ago briefly held up a brand new camera that I don't know if you want to talk about or not.
I'm under review embargo. This is that I cannot say anything about how well it works, but this is a really good well engineered supposedly upgrade where this pops out and you can put this on your phone and now it becomes a really good image sensor, or a much higher quality image sensor than what's on the camera, and an application supposed to activate and stuff like that. So the embargo lifts in about a week, so I can, if Alex is on the show next week, we can both race to get this as as the things that we get to talk about.
It's pretty interesting, and I think I'll be getting one to go with my new iPhone.
They say the box says, I've unpacked it here. Now, again, I'm not making any comments whatsoever, but the box, right on the box, it says professional quality connected camera. So I'm going to the Boston Public Library this week. I'm going to be taking pictures of squirrels with it. We'll see how professional it is. But it's a cool item. It's a nice item. It also makes you feel like a spy because you've got the
cameras so cool.
inside your
Alex
hand.
Alex, let me play with it a little bit. I am not under NDA. I was duly impressed, and I can say that. I don't think that's a bad thing to say, but more to come next week, perhaps. Our show today brought to you by my drinking horn. This episode of MacBreak is brought to you by JackThreads.com. Stop dealing with the hassle of crowds and malls. JackThreads offers stylish clothing without being intimidating and a stress-free online shopping experience for men. And I forgot to wear my Jack Threads today. Got some really great Jack Threads. The stuff that's on the site, favorite brands, you know, Vans and Under Armour and Levi's and more. Also new brands you might never have heard of. They're all curated by a really talented editorial team looking for classics like a denim shirt to edgy graphic tees. You can get some information if you look at the website about why you might want to buy an item and what you might want to wear with it. They even have style tips from Jill. And Jill's a sweetheart. She steered me away from some of those skinny jeans, which I appreciate, Jill. Thank you. And towards something with a little bit of a looser fit. You can also cross-reference items based on other shop reviews. It's really social. It's fun. Purchases and saves. You know what items are popular. They are always updating inventory, so you'll be happy to go back there all the time. Prices range from $10 to $300. Any budget fits. Most items, and many of them anywhere, are regularly discounted, and you're going to get some great seasonal sales. And you see, it's more than just clothing. By the way, worry-free returns, including refunds, credits, and exchanges with free shipping both ways. Not too late to get some summer outfits, short-sleeved shirts, and awesome prints. But you can also look. It's time for the puffy jacket. The puffy jacket season's just around the corner. They got great summer sneakers still. Don't buy what everyone else is wearing. Skip them all and shop Jack Threads. They also have an iOS app. I love that, an Android app too, if you're one of those types. And there's some unusual stuff. If you go to jackthreads.com/MacBreak and sign up for an account, keep up to date on the best deals, the latest trends, and exclusive offers. Of course, no cost for the account. And you'll get 20% off your order when you enter the offer code MacBreak. MacBreak. Jack Threads, elevated style every day. And just to show you, it's not just clothing. I do have my Jack Threads drinking horn here. This is Jack Threads is a great place to get birthday presents. I actually got this for my son Henry because his 21st birthday is next week. And I think
Das Horn.
If you're 21, and I figure, you know, he's going to be going out to the bars to celebrate, why not wear your drinking horn? Uber capacity, 24 ounces of glory. It's got the hands-free neck strap, dishwasher safe, BPA free, not intended for use with hot liquids. But who's going to drink hot beer after all?
Honestly, I don't know, Leo, because this is going to be his first beer after all. Perhaps he shouldn't use something fancy. It might give him the wrong impression when he's introduced to alcohol.
He's never had a beer before, ever, ever, ever.
It's been all hard liquor.
Of course, you know he's in Boulder, so he's probably...
Okay, well, there you go.
Probably not beer that he's thinking about. I don't know what else you could do with this Das Horn, but anyway, we're going to package this up for Henry's 21st. Lots of great stuff at jackthreads.com. That's why I went there for Henry's birthday presents. 21st birthday. But for yourself, maybe a gift or two, too. Jackthreads.com. Use the offer code MacBreak and sign up today. JackThreads.com/MacBreak, if you will, just to give them some idea of where you heard about this. JackThreads.com/MacBreak. Can you add this to the box for sending Henry?
Leo, yeah, have you been breaking that in, doing some quality testing on that horn?
No, I haven't.
I do know that you walked back to the studio. I don't know if it was because you were, you know, it was a safety thing.
You know, when I went out to visit Henry last year, the frat he's in has a father-son day, which was quite an eye-opener. Among the other activities planned for the Father Sunday was a visit to the Coors Brewery. We did have a good time there, but they were very careful to keep the younger members of the frat from partaking.
Mother-daughter day goes to Budweiser.
It's probably very healthy for both the father and the son to have reciprocal incriminating Instagram pictures. Okay, we're not gonna tell anybody about this now. Remember, that's we took a tour of historic public libraries in the Boulder, Denver area.
Yes.
Oh, look, the Flatirons. Let's take a look at the geology of the Red Rocks.
Aren't those Flatirons gorgeous? By the way, in
Boulder? Man, it's like painted backdrops. Those PBS painting tutorials. They had it exactly right. Just and one stripe, yeah. And it's after going there every year. It's like I keep meaning to hike a little closer, but I never get there because they are, of course, way up there, and you need to be in shape. But
yeah.
What a backdrop for what a backdrop for having coffee and pastry on a rooftop building with your computer.
he's loving it, by the way. But I think I'm hoping he's gonna come back to California. But he is really loving it. Junior year at CU Boulder.
Nice.
Technology stocks. Stocks in general. Not so happy yesterday. I guess fallout from the Chinese collapse. Maybe that's too strong a word. Bumpy road.
Kerfuffle.
Uncertainty.
But boy, boing, Apple came back pretty fast, although still not back to the levels it was at before. It didn't sell as many iPhones as it should have or something, some insane thing. Tim Cook sent an email to Jim Cramer, and people are widely crediting this email with the bounce back. Apple regained $80 billion in market value. The stock was down 10% following the Black Monday. So Tim sent a note along to Jim Cramer. Now let me think. If you want,
Jim,
wanted to get the, hey Jim, not just what War Eagle just, and by the way, he wrote, "I get updates on our performance in China every." Wait a minute, I get updates on our performance in China every day, including this morning. And I can tell you we've continued to experience strong growth for our business in China through July and August. Growth in iPhone. This is basically a pitch to why, you know, you shouldn't punish Apple for China's failings. Growth in iPhone activations have actually accelerated over the past few weeks. And we had the best performance of the year for the App Store in China during the last 2 weeks. Apple's share price, which had opened below 100 bucks for the first time since October, back up to 106 bucks.
Yeah,
I guess Jim Cramer must have mentioned it. I don't know, on his show Mad Money, perhaps.
And it got a lot of play around the internet.
Yeah.
He was on the Today Show yesterday morning and read the email, said, "I've spoken with Tim Cook, and Tim Cook told me blah, 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 blah."
Little bit of publicity.
Tim said, "Just chill, Jim."
That's exactly why you do that. No, if you have anything to say that starts with, "Well, I talked to Tim. Tim Cook reached out to me today, and said this to me." Guess what? You don't have to go on after the cooking segment. You will go on like in the first half hour.
And so it's
worked out well for Apple. Well, works out well for Jim.
And it was so bananas yesterday that the Today Show. So on the West Coast, we usually just get a rebroadcast of whatever they did in the morning on the East Coast. So it's not really live, but sometimes. Oh,
geez. Was that a cat, a dog, a small rodent, a ferret? What was that?
It was something I'm not sure what just jumped off my desk.
Do you have cats?
No.
Oh, dear.
I'm the only person here.
It's the raccoons buying keyless car fobs on Alibaba. They get into places. You got snacks. They're going to find them, Kelly.
That's all it is.
You should put a lock on that door. I'll help you install it.
Okay. Sorry. You're in. On the Today Show yesterday, when it was broadcast here, if something is happening, they make them stay in the studio and do it again. It's 7 a.m. on the West Coast.
Oh, interesting.
Is what you hear. And so that means that they're doing live again. Now, they will usually like flip back and forth between like the stuff they already had scheduled and something new. But yeah, yesterday morning, we got a second broadcast. We got a live broadcast as well, talking about what was going on with the stock market.
Wow.
It was crazy. And yeah, and Jim Cramer was like, within the first 5 minutes of the show.
No, it's okay.
Coming on. So like 5 or 10 minutes after 7 yesterday morning was him on NBC going, yeah, so it turns out, you know, I chatted with Tim Cook.
My close personal friend.
Exactly. Well, apparently he emailed Tim Cook and said, look, I'm covering this. If you have anything to weigh in, I need to be on the air by 9. And then Tim Cook got back to him around 8 a.m., which probably means like 3 or 4 hours after he woke up that morning.
Right.
And sent him that statement.
Yeah.
May not be.
He is an early riser. I'm not even joking. That's not the first time that he's been on top of something. Like he must have been up since 4 in the morning his time.
Are there SEC regulations about what a CEO of a company can say?
Apparently, he was reiterating the guidance that they provided. Like nothing he said deviated from the guidance that they provided previously for the quarter.
Yeah,
right.
Because otherwise, it would you could charge him with insider trading because he's telling a stock broker, Jim Cramer, some inside information about the company. But because it's only he obviously got legal counsel before he emailed them. But
I don't know. I mean, I stay out of this because I don't understand the law, and I understand business law even less. But
right.
I'm just as an idiot, I'm asking. But if he is talking to a member of the press, isn't he making that outside information available to everybody?
That's an interesting question. It was a private communication, so it was up to Cramer to make it public.
Well, he solicited it for the show. Like Cramer he asked could him have, for a comment for the show.
Cramer could have acted upon it privately.
Right. That would be right. I got legal advice about 15 or 20 years ago about like what I can and cannot, should or should not do.
Yeah.
And one of the things was simply that if you can provide a link or a piece of paper for the decision that you made that says it was available to everybody.
Right.
Maybe it won't be a big problem, but it will still be a problem. But yeah. I can't imagine that being provided as a newsman a piece of information to share to the world that's inside.
Yeah, as he's a trader too, but I would agree with
you. I don't understand how that works either.
I would hasten. I know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's had some problems in the past. I agree with you, Andy. I know nothing about this stuff. I'm just thinking, foolishly perhaps applying common sense to it.
if there were common sense in the market, we wouldn't see Apple like stock dipping at any reason for a lot of the reasons why it ever dips. That's another reason why I realized that I don't understand anything.
Yeah, that's why I don't buy tech stocks. I don't want to go anywhere near this stuff. Apple's going to perhaps be going to the Supreme Court. Samsung says we don't like this $1 billion judgment, a judgment which later was reduced, of course, to just a few hundred million dollars. Samsung still doesn't want to pay it. That's that verdict that says that Samsung violated Apple's iPhone patents, or the jury verdict. So in court papers filed this week, Samsung said they would fight it to the Supreme Court. The questions present issues of enormous importance to patent litigation and the scope of innovation, especially in high-tech industries. The reason they wrote this letter is to say, hey, judge, can we hold off on paying you the hundreds of millions of dollars until after we appeal to the Supreme Court? It was last week the U.S. Federal Circuit Court of Appeals rejected Samsung's request to reconsider the ruling.
I pay for all these new Galaxy Note 5 styluses. Come on, cut us some slack.
We got some expenses coming up.
We're going to have to fix a lot of phones.
You tried talking about that Ars Technica, I think it was, an article that was, who wrote it? I think it was Ars, but I can't remember, that said that you can jam this stylus back in, and you can. It goes in, this is backwards. Yeah.
Yeah, Phil Nickenson from Android Central did a couple days ago. He told people not to do this, but they didn't. Yeah, they didn't. But Samsung issued a statement now, which is amazing.
What did they say?
People that they should read the manual.
You're holding it wrong.
We highly recommend our Galaxy Note 5 users follow the instructions in the user's guide to ensure they do not experience such an unexpected scenario caused by reinserting the S pin in the other way around.
Yeah. You're inserting it wrong.
Wow.
Yes.
So, the truth is, it's very easy to do that. Oh, I just did it. Oh, crap.
Leo.
And that's their official stance is RTFM?
Yeah. Are you serious, Leo?
Did you just do it?
Withdraw the stylus.
I thought, because it went in so easily, I thought, oh, this isn't going to be a problem to get it out.
Oh, my God.
The clippers closed down on it, apparently.
They did. Yeah. And now you're not supposed to rip it out. You're supposed to gently.
Yes.
No, I can do that. Don't get those pliers anywhere near it. Oh, my God. I can't believe I just did that.
You inserted
it. Just get a hammer and push it in the whole rest of the way. You may not have damaged the
thing. No, I haven't damaged the thing yet. The damage occurs because it's still loosely in there. The damage occurs when you. So something closed on it, Renee?
Yeah, apparently there's some sort of gripper inside. At least that's from the stories that I've read.
There is. I feel like it's gripped it.
And the problem is that if you pull it out in an injudicious fashion that way, then it won't break the phone. It will just damage the sensor that the thing uses to detect whether the stylus is inside the holder or not. So that you will lose that cool feature where as soon as you dislodge it, you pull it out, it's ready to take.
Don't come at me with tools, please. I think this.
What if you paint it with like black rubber and you tell people it's a cellular antenna?
Yeah.
There you go.
Just hold the phone upside down and it'll look like an antenna.
I just did that.
It'll be the Galaxy OG, right?
I thought
the Galaxy OG with the
OG, the old school. Yeah. I thought that it would be harder to do. I should have read that it's the manual. Yeah. I thought that at some point it will give me some resistance, then I'll push on it and that's when I'll be in trouble. But in fact, it just loosely slid in, and then tried to retract it.
That illustrates a lot, though.
So it
is
a problem. Yeah. You know what? It is a problem.
Samsung claiming that read the manual, otherwise, this is going to happen to you. Like, if there's no resistance whatsoever, it just seems like it would be very easy to make that mistake.
Yeah, because you're not even looking.
Yeah.
Gosh darn it.
But, Leo, it's going to be okay, right? Because you can take it to the Genius Bar.
The Smarty Pants Bar.
Smarty Pants Bar.
Yeah. I'm always pleased when like Samsung seems to be learning stuff. Like with the Galaxy S6, it's the nicest phone they made in a while. But it's like I wish that you would. There's somebody you need to hire or fire at that company that says, "Well,
that
you
was know, really too easy."
That's the sort of thing that a higher life form would not design a phone that way. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, somebody didn't
test it first. Put a Twizzler in, see what happens.
Somebody didn't really think about it. So what's happened is the top is now trapped inside some sort, and it's still, you can see it's still loose. In fact, every time I do this, the buzzer goes off that I've removed the pen. So it's on the sensor there.
It's like a hook or something.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure that if you've got an appropriate spudger, you could slide it out.
Yeah, I need a spudger. So I was poo-pooing this story because I thought, well, you'd have to be a you'd have to be a moron to stick this in the wrong way.
Yeah, apparently so.
Hey, zing!
Sorry.
Apparently.
The joke was right there. I had to do it. You're not a moron. This is a badly designed product.
Apparently you don't. Because I love this. I love this phone, but boy, I guess I won't be using it much anymore. I guess I could pull it out. I could pull it out really hard, but it will break the sensor.
Yeah.
And sure, I don't know. The sensor is not super important, but it's kind of important.
Really
like, you want the sensor because that's the thing that, for instance, lets you draw on it when the phone's off. And
you knew what you were doing, Leo, and you got stuck. I mean, imagine just someone not paying attention.
What if you sort of unscrew it as you take it out? If you rotate does that make it less bad?
Is there
it's
a
like
rule?
An arrow wound right now?
Where's
Kelly?
The manual? There's no manual. This didn't come with a manual. There's like this booklet.
It must have. Samsung said to read it.
You don't have to fix it right now, Leo. Wait, get one good drink in you. Get nice and mellow and relaxed.
This is great.
What I need to do is get maybe some KY jelly or something and.
Also, show title.
I think the title.
I can't believe I did that. I even knew.
You knew.
But I didn't. Yeah. But I didn't know. No, but I thought that it will be harder. Mm-hmm. That was very loosely going in. There was nothing. I thought it would be harder. All I need is some KY jelly. I inserted it wrong.
Yeah, you inserted it wrong. That's
the title. Being served right now. I'm sorry. It's just...
this is so.
So Renee, are you just like with your free hand like writing an iMore column about this as we're
No, this is Phil Nickens' problem. Android Central. They have to deal with this.
I can't. I'm actually actively sad because I like this phone a lot.
I know. And it's a stupid.
By the way, it cost me almost $900.
But could you imagine Apple if they made the Apple Watch and you slid one of the buckles in wrong if it just got stuck halfway there and you could never get it out again? Like they've got to test these things. Like how does this go past QA?
That is a good comparison because you know the styluses on the iPhone are. Oh wait a minute, they don't make any.
They eliminated the problem, Andy. They didn't stop the problem at the end of the cycle. They just stopped getting the chain. Typical.
I guess what I should do now is figure out how to take the whole thing apart.
Yeah,
because I haven't damaged anything yet. The sensor still
posted a.
Is there a fix?
I don't know. Maybe iFixit has a
later tonight on All About Android. Leo will be performing surgery.
We'll use your
on
phone
5.
As a cautionary tale.
I am like so bummed out.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Leo. Is it within 14 days? Can you just exchange it?
It is.
Oh, hey.
There you go. I just bring it back to AT&T and say, I got a problem.
Hey, it's within the 14-day window. Seriously.
All right, I'm going to the AT&T store.
I would definitely do that
dude,
at your first recourse. Yeah.
Dude, I can't, what happened?
You can't stylus.
And he'll say, we heard about that on Android Central. You put it in wrong. Did you read the manual, sir? What manual? I have to bring this to AT&T after the show.
Yep. And you got to wait in line with all the other stylus people.
We'll all be standing there like this with a stylus coming out of.
You could use one of those to work to write on another Galaxy Note. That's the brilliant plan. You end up with a really big stylus. And
the plus stylus.
Does this count as intentional, like damage, like I broke it? No. This is accidental. Unless they're watching YouTube, you're right.
This should not happen.
The three of us are willing to swear you were taking great care of that stylus. This is not your fault. There are people to blame for that. None of them are at this table, Leo.
Just tell them the antenna's falling out.
That's good. Kelly, you got it. The antenna's falling out. I don't know, and it doesn't seem to stay in when I put it in.
It was a millionth of one shot, Doc.
You're the ass man.
Yes, this is the answer. We have a good plan for you, Lee.
I wonder. Okay, I'll report back whether. No, don't come at me with tools. I'm telling you, it's going to AT&T. Okay. Unless you're willing to take this to AT&T, it's staying right there, and I'm not touching it with no iFixit spudger kit. It doesn't. Seriously, Jason, this is not.
Oh, Twitter's trying to figure out a hashtag for you, Leo. And right now they're settling on Pengazi. That's supposed to be
those. Yes.
Pengazi.
After Stylusgate, Pengate, and now it's on Pengazi. And Brad Mullen has admitted defeat with Pengazi.
What do you mean? Wipe it with a cloth? Holy cow.
Mankind is born to trouble just as surely as the sparks fly upward.
Why isn't this class action? Like, real?
What hope do normal people have, Leo?
Well, does it happen to a lot of people? I don't know.
The iPod battery was a class action thing because I got a new iPod out of it.
Well, Apple's doing Apple's bringing back phones that have a camera problem. So hopefully Samsung will just bring back phones that have a stuck stylus. Or I guess all of them have the stuck stylus.
Burke, don't look at this and say I can fix it. You can't. Come here. No. Burke is our repair guy. He can fix anything. But you see how loose it is? Yeah. And then when it comes right there, No, I'm taking it to AT&T. I don't want to. He's going to. The guy could take it to the AT&T guy says, well, it looks like you slid something in there, sir.
And I'd venture to guess that you aren't the only person that's going to be taking the Note 5 back for this very reason.
I swear to God, I thought this story was link bait, was spurious. Come on, who's going to put it in backwards? You'd have to force it, and then, of course, it would be stuck. No, it slides in really. I mean, there's no resistance until there is when you're trying to remove it.
Yeah, design team should have caught this in some way. They should have built in some sort of mechanism that prevents it from sliding in backwards, especially if it results in such an easy locking in this way.
It would have been easy.
That's a design issue.
Well, make sure you can't do it twice, Jason.
I mean, whomever can withdraw this pen shall thenceforth be CEO of Samsung. By divine providence. But he is but a lowly stable boy. Surely he cannot be the noble one.
Leo, was the Note 5 your pick for today?
Call me Wart. I'm supposed to review it for before you buy.
Oh, it's going to be a hell of a review now, ain't it?
There's a
great review. Yep.
Okay, if AT&T will not exchange it, then, Burke, I will give you an opportunity to attempt to work your wily ways upon it. I like somebody in the chat room said, put a straw, although, I mean, there's a little air gap. You could put a little straw around that if you found something small enough.
Oh, and...
And then as a sheath.
Can I tell you...
That's not a bad idea.
Jason, why do you keep coming at me with crap?
You know, when I broke my iPhone 5 in the first week, it was also, I hated that I broke it, but it was also an opportunity to say, okay, let's see how good customer service is.
No, I always...
This is a great opportunity for you to bring it in, explain what happened honestly, and then to see if AT&T/Samsung decides to be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, or at least acknowledge that, okay, yeah, we could have done
better. Phil did it to his review unit. I did it to the phone that I spent $850 on from AT&T and extended my contract for 2 years.
We had a bunch of people in the forums who had it done. That's how we found out about it. They just
it's not unusual.
No, they weren't paying attention. Yeah, it would be easy to do. Like you said, it felt like it worked. So.
Yeah, it would be easy to do.
Yeah. Jim in the chat room has a good idea, which is pull the stylus out and let it be broken.
Yeah.
And then go to AT&T and just say it's not recognizing the stylus anymore.
I'll wait till they refuse me for this one. I guarantee you when I go to the AT&T, they know me at the AT&T store. I spend a little bit of time there.
They're watching us now.
They're probably watching now. That was true. When I dunked my iPhone in the water and brought it to the Apple store up here in Santa Rosa... I was honest. I said, yeah, I dunked it in a glass of water, and he said, yeah, I know. I saw you do it. So it's good. I was honest. Cause if I'd said, oh, I don't know what happened. He would have said, come on, Leo. So.
Oh my gosh.
This is a problem. This is not an insignificant problem. I now acknowledge this is not link bait. This is not an insignificant problem. Kind of a big issue. All right. let's take a break. Stop laughing at me, Kelly.
Leo Laporte, the struggle is real.
The struggle really is. It's not easy being geek.
Why must Leo always get the fuzzy end of the lollipop?
What do you think, Samsung?
Takes a shot. Set up a piece.
Will Samsung issue special removal tools for this? How are they going to fix this?
Send someone to every house.
They're going to have to do something about this.
Software enhancement.
Yes, it's a software fix.
It's not an easy thing to
They'll fix. Disable the clip electronically.
All right. Let us take a break. We're going to come back with more. Renee and Andy and Kelly and me, and I'm the moron in the group. Our show today brought to you by Wealthfront. This is an interesting time to talk about the stock market, right? Investments, however, I see a lot of articles now saying, hey, don't freak out, don't panic. Remember, you're in the stock market for the long haul. And there is no better place historically, year over year, for the last 100 years to put your money than the stock market. You're certainly not going to put it in a savings account. And in fact, I think, what is the current interest rate on a savings account? I think I saw 0.25%. I think you can do better. You should be investing your money for your family's financial health, for your retirement, or just, maybe to buy a house. But you're wondering, how do I do it, especially in this tough environment? Well, I can tell you, Wealthfront. Now, there are a few reasons why you want to go with Wealthfront. They make it easy for anyone to access world-class, long-term investment management. You could start with as little as $500. This is actually a great time to start. When the market's down is when you want to start putting money into the market. You could sign up for an account at Wealthfront.com and for free get a portfolio. You'll go through some questions. They're going to ask you about your risk tolerance, your time frame, and all of that. And then they will generate a portfolio for you. Now, here's the cool thing about Wealthfront. This is not a human. This is a computer trading program that is very well designed to optimize your investment for the best risk-adjusted return, customizing it specifically for your needs, your desires. And they do things that really humans can't do very well, like tax loss harvesting and direct indexing. So you'll optimize your after-tax returns, lower your tax bill. Whether this is for a personal or a joint account or a retirement account, you'll see every trade that Wealthfront makes. This is not, we're not talking day trading. This is long-term holds. You'll know exactly what they're doing. They're transparent. They're accessible. And this is what I love about it. The fees are really low. You know, a human advisor will charge between 1% and 3% of what you have under management. That doesn't include hidden fees for transactions and charges. Wealthfront, by the way, the investors at Wealthfront, are the investments are based on these two of these books, one of which I read a few years ago and blew me away, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. I don't know how you pronounce Burton's last name, Burton Malkiel, but he's one of the principals at Wealthfront. The other, Winning the Loser's Game by Charles Ellis. These guys are really smart, and they have crafted a very sophisticated way to do it at a ridiculously low price. And that's very important in your investment. You can, you know, if you're talking 1% to 3% of what you have under management, that could eat all your returns. At Wealthfront, you pay 0.25% a year, 25 basis points, and there are no commissions and no hidden fees. We're talking about $5 a month for a $30,000 account. And no additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. That's why they got now more than $2.6 billion in client assets. That's a 20 times growth in the last 2 years. Join Wealthfront and start investing your money the right way. Wealthfront.com/MacBreak to sign up and get that free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the allocation they recommend for you. And just for Twit listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge forever. You can start with $500, but the first $15,000 you'll pay zero fees on. Zero. Claim your offer today at wealthfront.com/MacBreak. For compliance purposes, I have to tell you, Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risks, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure. Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. Try it today. This is actually a very good time to do it. Let's move on, shall we? I've inadvertently provided fodder for all you Apple fans.
I was just checking the Gazelle price for a Galaxy Note 5 with a stylus stuck.
It does come with the stylus.
You use Logic Pro X?
Yes.
Yes. Who doesn't?
Me.
Me neither. My son is a massive Logic Pro fan. And this is one of the really premier programs in the world for a very affordable price. What is it, $200?
Yeah, and you keep getting free updates, which is amazing.
And the new update allows Alchemy integration. So Apple acquired Camel Audio, very popular effect and plugin maker. They do the Alchemy software. I actually bought Henry Alchemy some years ago. But now you'll get it automatically if you use Logic Pro X or Mainstage. I don't know what Mainstage is.
Isn't Mainstage the audio component? I'm totally making
the
this
performance.
Up.
You know what? It's the performance component of Logic. That's what it is. It's an interface for performance, right?
I think so.
Anyway, I don't know what this means, but I do know that Henry is excited. Anybody who uses Logic Pro should be. Alchemy is awesome. It's very sophisticated synth with over 3,000 presets. Great performance controls. Pretty nice stuff.
Just waiting for Jason Snell to tell me how to use it to make the podcast better.
Does he use Logic for the podcast?
Yeah, he converted me. He and Dave Wiskus converted me to using Logic for different reasons. Jason does strip silence, so he takes out all the unnecessary stuff, and you can just see the bits of dialogue, and it makes it easy to align multiple track editing.
Very nice. $199.99 for Logic Pro X, another $30 for Mainstage 3. Logic Remote is free, and if you have any of those, you will get the update. Pretty sweet. That really makes it a good deal. Did you see the New York Times had an incredible piece, a video? Now, don't give me a hard time on this. Justin Bieber and Diplo and Skrillex, apparently
they're all Canadian.
They're all Canadian. Uh-huh. That's neat. Collaborated on Justin's big hit. Justin and the New York Times have made an incredible, I would say this is one of the best videos I've ever seen, about creating a song called Justin Bieber, Diplo, and Skrillex Make a Hit. But they interview Bieber, Diplo, and Skrillex, and they show them working. And I'm not sure, I can't really tell, but Skrillex is clearly using a Mac, and I don't know what the, is that Logic? It might be. That he's playing with.
Might be Ableton Live.
Or Ableton.
Yeah. That just glancing at it.
You would know, Jason Howell, of course. What do you use?
Just glancing at it, it looked like Ableton Live, yeah. But I could be wrong. I use Pro Tools primarily. I've used Logic plenty, although not in the past few years. I've used Ableton Live.
Listen to a Skrillex. There's a sound in this song. Listen to this. This is amazing how he made it. It's Bieber's voice. So let me. I think maybe it's a little.
It's like pitch way up.
Here's a little bit. What is that? Is that Ableton?
Too many quick flashes.
It said live next to the Apple menu.
Yeah, it's live. Peace. It's Ableton live.
So he took this.
Pitch way up, distorted. Bounced, rebounced again. So it sounds worse almost.
And then what they've done on the side of the video, which I love, is kind of a Guitar Hero style.
Yeah, waveform.
Scrolling waveform.
Like a simplified waveform.
Yeah. Well, on the left.
Actually, that's like a pitched. Yeah.
Almost destroy a sound so many times.
Was this posted to Connect? Can I find it there?
It's New York Times art section. Just went up this morning. It's amazing. I watched the whole 8-minute video. It's incredible. It's the story of how a song got made, and the Times is just.
I need to watch this. I love this kind of stuff. I can watch this 24/7.
Yeah.
But it still has the elements of some.
And of course, the Mac plays quite. A featured role in it. It's the only computer they show, and they talk a lot about how they did that.
Even if it is Justin Bieber.
You know what?
You're welcome.
I'm not a fan, but it's a great song.
Yeah.
And look what they're doing here with the video. The way they're showing the music on screen and this kind of great visualization.
I've never been to clubs. Like a real
I gotta
person.
Say, it's I admire the fact that it's so weird.
It's a... Well, I kind of did a thought experiment where I took those out, and it would be a much less interesting video. It would just it's them sitting against a blank
screen. That's true.
But it really brings it to life because this is matching the music as they talk about it.
Screaming for them because like a lot of times it's like the 16-year-olds and they look.
It's very visually interesting.
I think it's really well done. And it's performers are in black and white. They're monochrome, but the music is in color.
I just want to love every part of it.
Anyway, well worth looking at. It's in the New York Times art section. It's called Justin Bieber, Diplo, and Skrillex Make a Hit Song. And so it's Ableton he's showing off there. Ableton Live is about performance, isn't it?
That's kind of the basis for it is about live performance. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of integrated a lot of traditional DAW kind of functionality as well.
DAW? DAW?
Sorry. Yes, DAW.
Digital Audio Workstation.
Yeah.
Speaking of music, only 1 in 5 people have quit Apple Music. Apple was quick to point out.
Oops.
We talked about it last week. I think the Music Watch study that found that a survey of 5,000 people, it said that almost half who had tried Apple Music had stopped using it. Apple says that number is much lower. 79% of people who sign up for a trial are using the service. In the Music Watch survey, 28% of respondents who were trying out Apple Music said they also had Spotify premium subscriptions. Only 11% were users of the free version of Spotify. 6% used the free version of the internet radio.
I asked our news team why they didn't post that, and the news guy, Joe, said it seemed fishy, so he asked before posting, and turned out it was wrong. So,
well,
hey, Joe.
I think they may both be right. I think it's kind of how you define use, right? So,
yeah, that's... I had trouble understanding exactly what kind of point that they're trying to make there. Because part of it is, are they using it, meaning that has their usage of Spotify and other apps gone down? Has Apple Music supplanted it? Or is it an app that is somewhat in the mix of where they get their music from? And furthermore, how significant is it? The first significant metric is going to be at the end of September, which is, I think, is the end of the 90 days where everybody who signed up immediately
that's
is going to start
matters,
having to pay for it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one thing for people to see that $10 on their credit card statement and say, okay, whatever, we'll keep going at it. And another thing, if we just see people just go boom, drop. I've got a calendar reminder reminding me to make sure that I don't keep paying for this after the free period. Or did people already go into their account and simply say, do not auto renew this service?
So that's. I'll add one more to the 5,000 people in the survey. I am a Spotify premium subscriber, also a Google All Access premium subscriber. And naturally, I'm going to do the three-month trial of Apple Music.
90 day.
Although I would have loved it if the 90-day trial were available on the Android, and it isn't.
No, not ready yet.
I find myself having a weird reaction. I think that, and this is, I don't think I'm going to renew, and I'm going to start paying for it. And it's not because I don't think it's worth the $10 a month. It's because, and I'm not trying to be sarcastic here, I think Apple Music for me will be a lot easier to understand when it's only an app that plays music that I own locally on the device. Because every time I get really confused or surprised by it doing something, it's because, oh, you assumed that just because you ripped this 2-CD set last night and added it to the library and then synced your phone to it, that it was going to be files. Oh, no. We assumed that you wanted this when you added this to the library, that you wanted it from the Apple Music version of it. And it's like, could you please just do what I ask you to do? Don't do what I don't ask you to do. And if you think that I'm asking you to do something that's silly, remind me I'm about to do something silly and make sure I want to do the thing I'm asking you to do.
I'm wondering where I would fall in these statistics, because I like the For You screen in Apple Music. I do not use the cloud library. I never used iTunes Match. I wasn't into any of that. What I use is the For You, and I will flip through those playlists. Like the intro to Van Halen list was really nice for a road trip I took recently to see my family. And like some of the other intro stuff, or like New Order deep cuts, and I'm totally...
How much of this For You is like the Genius, and how much of it is...
Yeah.
What I wasn't clear. I look at it and I see a lot of hip hop on mine.
It's biased Genius, so it ties it. It determines what it thinks you want, but then it biases it based on your likes and dislikes as you go.
Okay.
And the stuff that you play in Apple Music. So I have occasionally used the For You, and I use the radio stations, but I don't do either of those things regularly. And so, am I a person who has given up on Apple Music? Because I'm not going to pay for it. I don't pay for any service now, though. So I'm not a person who would be sacrificing my Spotify account in favor of this, because I don't have the paid Spotify account either. I don't pay for any sort of streaming. Apparently, I'm the exception. So for me, this seems, you know, I'm wondering, like, which of those statistics would be where I would fall, because I haven't given it up. But I was never a heavy user of it in the first place. And I would continue not to be. I would be completely content now that the radio stations, the ones that you can build yourself in iTunes Radio, now that those actually work the way I want them to and the way I set them up, I feel like those are of much more value to me than any of the stuff that was in Apple Music that it was giving me. Like, it's nice to see some of those playlists. But for the most part, I'm more looking at... just using the radio stations occasionally, and that's it. So
what happens to this For You at the end of the 3 months if you don't pay? Does this section go away?
No, I think that stays, and it'll direct you either
only
back to Apple
Music
and offer you again, or to iTunes if you don't have it. Like, for me, Apple's going to lose money on me, because I just used iTunes Match because I didn't want to ever have to sync with iTunes again. So when I wanted something, I would just buy it.
Right.
It would be on all my devices, and I'd play it when I wanted to hear it. But now with Apple Music, my use case is always just, hey, Siri, play. Sorry, I keep saying that and it drives people nuts. Yo, Blotto, play whatever I want at any time, any cover of anything I want. It's total music on demand. I don't have to buy stuff anymore. If I hear a song in my head, if I hear it somewhere else, if I just feel like playing it, I'm just three or four words away from getting it. And that, to me, is just living in the future.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, at some point, I'm going to have to decide which one I'm going to pay $10 a month for. I probably will be Spotify, but part of that is because all this is recommending is hip. I don't like hip hop music.
Did anyone else ever use your account, Leo?
Well, my son has it a lot. There's a lot, but this is not music I've been listening to. This is music that is in the that I bought at one time, which is not in my current iTunes list because you know, Henry bought it and I got rid of it. I have to say, this is not useful to me because all I would get on this is a lot of music I don't like.
If the stuff you bought does not represent your personal taste, then for you,
R. Kelly,
not be
the Zero Zeros, Getting Ready for Date Night, Bobby
Henry
Wagner.
Might love this.
I don't even know if Henry would listen to this crap because a lot of this is commercial hip hop. You know, it's not the stuff he likes.
You can go in and redo those red dots, Leo, and just tell it what bands you want, and that'll greatly shift.
I might have to do that
for you.
I don't know why I'm getting Vampire Weekend. I don't even know who that. You know, it just feels like this is for somebody, not me. So that's a fail.
Go in and redo those red.
Thank God! Sunday morning classic rock: Van Morrison, Elton John, Dire Straits. There we go. I had to scroll all the way down to get the Beyonce.
Play that list or click the little heart for it. And then if you favorite some things like that, it should help adjust those.
But you know, I don't also, okay, now I'm really being whiny. I don't want to be ghettoized. I'm afraid other people must have this experience that if I do heart this and start listening to this, then they'll go, oh, we get it. And then it's going to be, instead of all hip hop, it's going to be all classic rock. I don't want that either. I don't know. I guess maybe this is less useful to me. Do you listen to a broad variety of music, Kelly? Or
I do. And so, the two I name dropped in that I was talking about earlier were Van Halen and New Order. And so I get some of the rock stuff that I like to listen to, and I get some of the 80s new waver stuff I like to listen to, and some of the current electronic music, which is also what I enjoy. So the list can be diverse, but I think it's one of those things like Netflix where it's one thing if you like it, but the things that you actually play are going to be what are the more weighted recommendations.
So it gets better the more you
playlist,
use it.
Yeah, if you heart that playlist, that might be okay, but if you start actually playing some other stuff through Apple Music, I think it would be more tuned to you. And for whoever it was that asked in the chat room, it is always Van Halen. It is never Van Hagar.
I'm a little offended that you had to ask.
Never heard of that. Is that like a Star Wars prequel?
No, 55, can you?
Sammy shot first. I think that this is typical, though, because I haven't listened to it, and it's a tough hump for Apple to get over that, oh, it'll get better if you listen to it, right?
Because a lot of people do those red dots, and they seem to get something that is acceptable.
So it's just me then. All right.
Yeah, that helped me a lot, I think, with mine, was tuning those.
Yeah, I mean, I really would much rather, don't make guesses about me. If you ask me explicitly what I like, what I don't like, even if it's just like an eye exam sort of thing, do you like more like this or more like this?
Well, I did the red dots, and I can guarantee you there was no hip hop in my red dots.
Yeah, that was disappointing for me too. I haven't redone it, and I should. But the couple times I did it, it knows about 1,000 shades of gray when it comes to certain types of music. But it's like, you know, an IBM PC-AT graphics card when it comes to other categories of music, saying, do you like Leonard Bernstein or Shostakovich?
But contrast this to the most used subscription service, which is Pandora, where what you do is you say, I want this artist. It makes a list of that artist, and then similar artists, does a very kind of credible job. And now you have that radio, and you can just go to that. You've got I've got 40 stations in there. That is much more intuitive, much easier, and I think for most people, a much more satisfying experience. That's the competition.
Yeah, you can do. That's one of the interesting things about the new Apple Music service is that you can make playlists, you can make up next cues, and you can make radio stations. And for some people, that's a ton of complexity, and it makes a lot of UI overhead. But some people really only want to make radio stations. Right. Some people really only want their playlists, and it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to serve that big an audience.
To be all things to all people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's such a big challenge for Apple. For all the flack they're getting about the launch of Apple Music, I don't think it's even practical for them to say that we're going to develop a music service that everybody's going to want to use, because there's you talk to 10 people, you have 10 different styles of their relationship with music is. Yeah.
But if there's one thing wrong with iTunes, it tries to do too much, right?
Again, I just wish. Yeah, I still wish there were a separate app that said, here is an mm-hmm. app for managing music that is on your device. There is no question about it. This is all for on-device music. And I don't think that there are enough third-party apps that settle that either.
I'm probably an outlier because I probably don't listen to enough. I don't use it enough. I don't listen to enough music through it. When I listen to music, I listen in kind of a different way. For instance, it's not on my Sonos, and I use Sonos. If I'm going to listen to music, a lot of the times it's on Sonos. So it's not getting any signals from that.
It is coming.
It is coming? Good.
By the end of the year, they said.
That's huge. I'm surprised that because Beats was on Sonos. I'm surprised that they didn't get that right up front. But Sonos is probably a tiny fraction of the overall audience, so maybe it's not that important.
But that's exactly the sort of stuff we're talking about, though. If I don't care if what fraction of the audience are listening to music through Sonos. If the way over the past 2 or 3 years I've been listening to my music are these wonderful Sonos speakers in my living room, I'm going to reject an entire multi-billion-dollar music initiative because it simply doesn't work through my little $200 speakers.
Yeah,
that's how hard it is to build a service like that.
Yeah, really right. Challenging.
100 countries though at launch.
You want to talk about silliness. You want to talk about silliness? I will listen to music through my Amazon Echo, even though it's one speaker, even though it's little and it's tiny, and it doesn't have a whole bunch of throw, simply because it's the one thing where I can just simply spontaneously say, like, you know, hey, Alexa, I want to play me the Diana Dimra opera I was listening to yesterday. And we'll say, playing Diana Dimra.
I have to say, that's another one if it doesn't work with Echo.
Okay.
Echo's a big one too, isn't it?
I don't know for how many people. So one of the big problems here is that I don't know what Apple's numbers tell them in terms of how people, by people, I mean young people who are listening to a lot of music, how they're consuming it now. And it might be something similar where they don't want to own cars and they don't want to buy things anymore and they only want to stream stuff. Yeah. And this might be the patterns of behavior they have. Yeah. So I'm super interested in finding out how, not our generation specifically, but new generation people actually think of the music and whether they care about half the things that we're upset about. I'm sure they do. Or even if, different things.
Yeah. Or even if they care about having a company curate playlists for them. It's like, no. I get all my music from friends of mine. They're giving me links on Spotify and giving me links on YouTube and other apps. So you're not required here. All you're required is making sure the speaker on my phone is disabled so that I can listen to my headphones. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think for me, one of the things in my relationship with music, I listen to music all the time. I sing along all the time. There's loads of music, basically. Like, for me, it's a very important thing. And one of the things that I noticed with the advent of Apple Music is that the radio stations in iTunes Radio that no one ever used actually got better. Because I had a couple that I use very much. I like to listen during the day when I'm trying to work. I like to listen to instrumental music. So I like a lot of movie soundtracks. So I put together this iTunes radio station that was mostly John Williams and then a few other composers. And it would basically play everything equally. And then after Apple Music, it did what I wanted, which is lots of John Williams and a good amount of this other stuff too. And it sort of figured out that I was trying to weight it by adding more John Williams albums than other albums. So for me, the iTunes radio stations got better. So I don't really have a desire to pay $10 a month for Apple Music. I'm really sort of hoping that the radio stations will continue to be free like they were before and just suck a lot less. And then maybe more people will get into that. And it'll be the same sort of halo effect that Apple counts on for everything else. Like, if you really like the radio stations, what if you could customize them even better? And you could do so if you just paid $10 a month for Apple Music. Like, that might be a thing that might actually work. And for me, it would certainly be something I would be very tempted by.
Let's see. We got so much more, and we're running out of time. I want to move fairly quickly through the next bunch of stories. Tesla engineer joins Apple's growing team of automated car experts. This Reuters story, apparently they were looking at his LinkedIn and noted that Jamie Carlson has, on his LinkedIn profile, said left Tesla for Apple.
LinkedIn, the boon to every journalist.
LinkedIn is really apparently great. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we've seen this Wall Street Journal story and so forth. Sounds like Apple's working on autonomous vehicles. We talked about this on Twit on Sunday, and the panel, Dwight Silverman and John C. Dvorak and Philip Elmore DeWitt, kind of all agreed that it really wasn't Apple thinking of autonomous vehicles, but more like subsystems for other car manufacturers. Credible?
No. I mean, like, there, it's a car with probably some degrees of autonomy. Yeah. I don't know if you can launch a fully autonomous car.
But Apple would sell a car.
I mean, they sell phones and they sell iPads.
They could. I was talking to someone the other day, and there's he's been in the audio industry long enough, and he's like one of these historian sort of people, and he gave me a story about what he thought that wouldn't it be interesting if Apple wanted to go back to the original days of car manufacturing, where you have one company that's going to be making everything but the coachwork, and then you can buy this and then have it basically built out in whatever coachwork you want. So if you wanted something that looked a little more zippy versus something that had, like, you know, sofas front and aft, you can have it made that way. I don't know if that's true or I don't know if that's actually happening or not, but it made me wonder if Apple really wants to do all the problems that are involved in servicing automobiles, or if they just simply want to say, look, BMW, Ford, Chrysler, if you want to make something that's built on the Apple car system, Here is the design that we've come up with. Here's the licensing. We will approve it. We will do made for Apple car chassis sort of technology, and they'd go off that way. All I know for sure, I mean, this is still like everything anyone's saying is speculation at this point, apart from the hiring. All I know for sure is that they're getting a lot of people to quit really great careers at established companies to move to Apple and work on this unannounced product. And so if it weren't something, I don't believe people who are speculating that, oh, well, they just want to build a car and have a test track so they can build software for center console dashes or for accident avoidance stuff and stuff like that. No, they wouldn't get these people across all of these places in the industry to leave these gigs if they were simply, we're hoping you can help us work on this button. Now, here's the button for getting to a podcast. It's red right now, but should it be a purplish red?
Can you imagine what the Apple dealerships will look like? That's the really exciting part of all this.
They'll be white, big white rooms with lots of light and no features.
With the genius servicemen.
Yeah. And you know their coveralls will be clean.
How do you get your car to the Genius Bar? Yeah.
Pardon me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How do you get your car to the Genius Bar?
You park.
Yeah, I think the Apple stores will have a ramp, and just drive right in.
We've had people do drive-through service at Apple stores after hours before. There's precedent. They collected a lot
of data. That's what makes it so cool, is like all these, like to Andy's point, all these problems that have to be solved, regardless of whether they ever decide that they're going to actually go forward and launch a car. And based on the hires, it looks like they're doing a lot of cool stuff. But there's just so many interesting things, like what is the software on this thing? What sort of a vehicle does it end up being? How will they service it? How will you buy? And all these things is what makes me excited. Not so much whether, you know, there's going to be a new iPhone next year, because of course they will, but what new problems can be solved and what sort of approach does a company like Apple take to solving those? And I think that's endlessly fascinating.
The real,
yeah, just like people, car companies that are doing experiments with autonomous vehicles right now are getting a jump start by buying this really big box from NVIDIA that has most of the sensor stuff and the software stuff they need to do the sort of really fast sensory and image processing to navigate a street. And when you think back on that, you realize that, well, actually, I would not have been clever enough to figure this out on my own, but NVIDIA is well positioned to build a box like that. And so you're kind of encouraged to think about what is Apple good at and what problems can they solve that very few other companies, including few others in the auto industry, are prepared to fix right now. I mean, Google is making a car itself. They're an ad company that does search, and you know, and yet they're doing a kick-ass car. It's working. It's not a theoretical thing. It looks kind of like a blister of some material that's not recyclable. It reminds me of, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, the special like batting helmet shaped car that you used to ferry pitchers from the bullpen to the mound on. That's what it looks like, and yet they're building it. So it's going to be interesting whatever comes out from that. I'm just not going to predict what it is.
We're going to take a break and come back with your picks of the week. Kelly, did you get the memo?
I did.
Okay, good. So Kelly will have a pick, so will Renee, so will Andy, maybe even I will. This hot new stylus.
It's not our ad blockers, Leo. You got to pick one of the two.
Slash antenna. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. It's National Make-A-Will Month at LegalZoom.com, and doing the right thing for your family and loved ones has never been easier or more affordable. LegalZoom has created a better way for you and your spouse to take control of your family's future. They have new last will and living trust bundles. The more you plan ahead with wills and trusts, and don't forget powers of attorney, the more you save. LegalZoom's online resources and estate planning tools can help you figure out what you need so you won't be confused by the many options they provide for you. It really is a case where it's just, it's straightforward, it's simple. You answer questions, you check boxes, and you're going to have a last will, a living trust, a durable power of attorney, all the things you need. You don't want the government to decide what, or a stranger to decide what happens to your property and your minor children, or what happens to you if you're in the hospital. Make a commitment to protect you and your family with a last will or a living trust right now. And by the way, while LegalZoom is not a law firm, they have contracted with independent attorneys in most states. Their LegalZoom network can get you advice from an attorney at a pre-negotiated flat rate that's very affordable. So you get it all. You get it all. I love LegalZoom because I feel like they are empowering people to take care of themselves, to take care of their family, and no better time to do it than National Make-A-Will Month. Don't put it off. Get legal help you can count on at LegalZoom.com. And if you want to save a little bit more, use the offer code MBW at checkout. LegalZoom.com. MBW is the offer code. And we thank LegalZoom so much for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Now do it. Don't think in your mind, oh, yeah, I got to do that, or I ought to do it, or I'll put it on my to-do list. Today's the day. Do it for me. Do it for your family. LegalZoom.com. Offer code MBW. Kelly,
yeah.
I see you have a tub for
only
your
sort of
pick. What is that?
It's a little one. So this is a company called Human Gear, and they make these. It's this little, I will tell you as far as size goes, one of the facts on their website says, will it fit a ding dong? And in fact, the Hostess chocolate covered sponge cake thing will fit in one of these. It's exactly the size.
Just right.
So you can find these at primarily at outdoor gear stores, which is why I thought this might be a good pick, because a lot of people have them because they go to places like REI or here in Portland. I got mine at Deacon Brian's Next Adventure. And at all these places, it tends to be like a camping thing. Like you want this so that it keeps your pills or your matches or your things like that, you know, protected. And it's a hard plastic deal. And so what I did with mine, here's the thing that I really like about it is that, let me line up the camera here. It's one-handed. So if I just squeeze the sides, I can take the top off.
Nice.
And so what I put in mine was all the little, and dumped all over my desk, all the little bits of stuff that accumulate on my desk that I can never find. So I've got my extra camera battery. This is one of those little Listerine strips because it holds an SD card. I've got my little nifty removal tool in there and like the end for a couple of cables that I like to carry
crafty.
Around.
You're using a Listerine strips box to hold an SD card?
Yeah, it totally fits.
That is so crafty.
And so, and then to close it, there's no, you don't have to twist or anything like that. And then, like I said, all you have to do is hold it really low and squeeze and it pops open. And so that's my pick. I got mine. They were on sale. And so I got mine for $2.
Wow.
So it was like a no-brainer. I almost bought a bunch of them. But I figured I'd start with one and see how it went. And it so far has been great for all those little bits of stuff that I accumulate that end up in the back of a drawer, behind something or under something, or in a giant container where I can't really find them. So that's my pick.
Nice pick. Thank you, Kelly. And you can get them from their site as well, right?
Yeah, you can get them from their site. They're on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
So,
HumanGear.com. Human Gear.
You can prime one. Let me look here.
I just bought one for a 3-pack of the mediums for $7.99.
Nice.
Yeah. So,
and now you can have 3 ho-hos.
Yeah.
Or ding-dongs.
It was ding-dongs.
Is it ding-dongs, ring-dings, or ho-hos? Or all three? I bet they're all the same size.
No, because ho-hos are the long ones that are the rolled up with the cream in the middle.
I'm so off. I'm so sorry.
How about King Dons? Are they King Don compatible?
No, just ding.
Sadly,
dong.
No.
They're too small for Canadian May West.
You cannot put a Tim Hortons in there.
No,
May West or a Joe Louis.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Anatko has a pick of the week.
Two quickies. One is a game that is basically everybody is playing right now. There's a reason why phone calls are going and emails are going unanswered. Pac-Man 256. They've taken the familiar Pac-Man game and turned it into sort of an infinite runner sort of game by the same folks who do Crossy Road. And so there are two things I really love about it. First, the gameplay is great. So you are, it's Pac-Man, but now you're sort of doing a Zaxxon sort of run here. It is not possible to do this backwards. Oh. But now imagine you have to go from bottom to top infinitely.
Oh, I like
because
that.
Because at the bottom of the screen, you know the kill screen glitch? That keeps creeping up. So if you go too far that way, you die that way. So not only are you being, getting points for like eating pellets and getting other prizes, and there you go.
That looks really fun.
And the graphics are really, really cool. But it will also give you points for it knows that you have strategized and you've taken a path so that you never go over the same path twice. You're just doing nothing but gobbling pellets. You're never going over pre-gobbled stretches of lane. I also like the way that you pay for this. You get imagine it's an arcade game. You get 6 quarters per day. So you basically are the 2 quarters mm-hmm. ready, 6 lives per day. When you use those up, you don't get any more plays till the next day and you get 6 more plays. And yes, you can buy some more, but number one, it keeps you from becoming obsessed about this. But also, really nice. It's a free to download, but if you give them $7.99, you get infinite free play, which is not a ripoff because $8 for a game of this high quality, that's a good value. So you get to play the hell out of it before you decide, you know what, I really like this game. Even if I stop playing it tomorrow, I want these developers to have $8. And so you have the ability to give them $8, and then you unlock it forever.
That's not bad at all, yeah.
And the second pick is just another quickie. I have been continuing to try third-party watch apps. This is a stainless steel app from Hoco, the same company with the red leather band that I did earlier. Stainless steel, $30 compared to $500 for the Apple one. Obviously, it's not the exact, it's not the same quality. It's more of a conventional sort of link together bracelet. To resize it, you have to use this cheap plastic tool to wedge apart links and put them back together. And of course, it broke after I incorrectly judged the size. So I had to go to Amazon and spend $7 for another set. Maybe you could use this to like camera the stylus back into your phone, Leo. Whereas the Apple band, you can actually just remove and add links without any special tools. But who cares? Because unless I don't Hulk out my wrists with either ho-hos or exercise. So if you adjust it once, that's pretty much all you have to do. It looks great, feels great. The only question is that this is I don't think Apple has actually no one has actually released any Apple Watch accessories or bands under the made for Apple Watch program. Apple has a certification program where they will make sure that you're using the right metal, so it's not going to corrode, it's not going to break, it's going to be structurally sound, it's going to be made well. None of those have been approved yet, but it's certainly still a thing. It's certainly going to happen. So maybe until you start to see official made for Apple Watch bands, these third party bands are great things to have. I've got the official band that I'm wearing every single day, but when I'm going out and I don't want to have this white piece of rubber around the watch, I want to have something a little nicer to wear for the day. $30, you can't go wrong. And like I said, it doesn't feel cheap at all. It just feels like a really nice stainless steel band. Weighs a ton. Costs only about $30.
Nice. Couple of great picks. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I am not picking watch bands because I have a problem and Andy is
you
not
do
helping
have
me
a problem.
At all.
Yeah, you do.
All of this stuff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I'm not going to have anything to do with watch bands today. I'm going to draw your attention. You might have heard of this young pizza artist named Gus Mueller who has a rocket oven and makes 30-second pizza, which I believe Andy is busy competing with right now on Twitter. But he also does apps in his spare time, and he's just updated his flagship app, which is Acorn.
Wait a minute. He has an oven that can make a pizza in 30 seconds?
It's like a jet. It's called a rocket oven. I think I've mentioned it before, but it's just, I don't know if it uses nuclear fission or atomic, maybe antimatter, but yeah, he's got a rocket oven for pizza.
I want a rocket oven.
The crust is a little bit ashy. You might have to.
Do you have a rocket oven too, Andy?
No, I have a pizza. I have a baking steel, a 30-pound sheet of half-inch thick steel in the oven that makes for really, really beautiful crust. I baked my first 3 pizzas over the weekend, and they were all eaten.
Yeah, no, having a pizza stone, I'm familiar with. Steel is new to me.
Maybe I'll make that a pick next week or the week after.
But. This rocket oven, there it is. It's made out of. This one is made out of a. Apparently, you have to do it yourself. You can't buy a rocket oven.
Yeah, Gus's is a little bit smaller than that, but it's the same.
Spent solid rocket booster from the shuttle program, apparently.
And the idea is that you heat it?
I don't know, 1,000 degrees or something crazy.
Why doesn't it just burn it? I don't get it.
It's one step before burnt, Leo. It's like that you ride the wave of explosion to get a delicious pizza.
30 seconds.
I expect his hands to be a lot more heavily bandaged than that if he's been using this. I'm very impressed.
I want one. Okay, never mind. Renee, you did have a pick of the week, but yeah, you can't just say the words rocket oven and move on. You've got it really.
I know better.
Yeah.
So he makes an app in his spare time when he's not making pizza. He makes an app called Acorn, and Acorn is one of the big, not a Photoshop competitor. Apple never made a competitor. What they did is made a bunch of frameworks that developers could use to make great editing apps, and his is Acorn. It's been around for years. He's just done a big update, Acorn 5. It has a lot. Gus is an incredibly, incredibly smart graphics engineer. Listening to him talk about GL and things like that is just mind-boggling. And he takes all of that knowledge and he pours it into Acorn, and it's got these great new features, shape fills and curves. And the difference between this and some other approaches is he tries to have everything integrated into one sort of window, which some people really prefer. They don't like to have bits and pieces of the app lying in all different corners of the screen. This is a really good, really integrated app for editing. It's super cheap. I think I saw it was $20 and I couldn't believe it because that's way too cheap for an app like this. Hopefully that's just a sale price because he should be charging $50, $70.
It's really Photoshop. I mean, it's everything you need. This is an upgrade. I had Acorn 4, so I have to pay the $30 for the new one, right?
He has it available on his site and on the Mac App Store, and there's an upgrade price.
I should have bought it from the
It's so cheap. I just keep it. I gift it to people to try and give them some more money because I want them to keep making it.
Yeah, it's totally.
But it really
awesome.
Is spectacular. I was trying it out earlier this morning, and there used to be a list of things I couldn't do because I grew up. I spent decades using Photoshop. It was muscle memory, and there used to be things I just couldn't do in other apps. And that list has become, I would say, negligible by now. So if you're looking for, and I know Adobe has subscription plan stuff now, but a lot of people just don't need Photoshop, which does 8 million different things. They just want an image editor, and this is a fantastic one.
It does
this
layers.
Is actually the official image editor at App Camp for Girls.
Oh, yeah? Woo-hoo. Nice. Yeah.
So whenever we have ScanSnap scanners,
yep.
And they can draw whatever they want to draw and then cut it out of their sketchbooks and scan it. And then they do all of the adjustments in Acorn, whether they want to clean it up and turn it into something digital or just make the hand-drawn version look a little nicer, then it's Acorn all the way.
Yep. I have Photoshop because I have that, $10 photographer's package from Creative Cloud. But when I want to quickly edit something for web or, this is Acorn is always the one I fire up. Acorn 5 just came out.
Yep, fresh off the pizza oven.
Fresh out of the rocket oven, ladies and gentlemen. I'm torn. Well, all right, I'll do this, and then I'll do Lisp some other time. How many of you remember the good old days of LucasArts and a little thing from Double Fine called the Grim Fandango? Yes, one of the great graphic adventures of all time. Available in the App Store. It's going to bring back memories of your ute, or in my case, of my 40s. And it is a really, really good program. You play the Grim Reaper.
Take me where?
And unfortunately, times are tough for the Grim Reaper. He's got a nasty boss. He's got work to do, stuff to get. You play this all the way through, Kelly, I can tell.
Oh, I did. Yeah, you were saying it was your youth, but it's really my misspent youth. I spent it on things like this in Pac-Man.
Exactly. So now you have two ways to waste your adulthood. This is really nicely, as you can see, remastered. This is a cutscene, but they've done a really good job of making it HD. So we'll skip the cutscene and we'll go right in. There's the game. We're in the game, and it's easy to use. You have this specialized mouse. You can look at things. Let's pick up that and see what's in that pneumatic tube. Nicely done. Really a lot of fun.
Wow.
Grim Reaper. I can't remember what it is, what it costs, but it's wasn't. I think it was $10. I don't think
it's not enough.
$15 on Steam.
$15 on Steam, but it's also in the Apple App Store.
I really like seeing some of the games like this that sort of get a caring restoration and then come back again.
Nicely done.
For people who weren't around for it sort of the first time. So I really enjoy when they when these come out and they look really nice. Like when I got to play Sam and Max on my Wii, that was very good.
Yeah.
Imagine if like the Elvis Costello record that I liked as a teenager, well, guess what? It's not compatible with any player anymore. You can describe it to other people, but you can never play it again. And that's what it's like when like gaming is like part of your childhood when you're growing up.
I want my
child at my knee to learn how to get the Babelfish and the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
Yes.
Eat aspirin. All right. Anyway, Grim Fandango. It's back, baby. We are out of time, but I want to thank you all for being here. What fun to have you get, Kelly. Come by anytime.
Yay, Kelly.
Kelly Guimont is available at macobserver.com or on the Twitter at Verso, V-E-R-S-O. And I ask you every time, Guimont?
No.
Guimont?
Guimont? No, it's really tragically American. It probably hurts Renee every time I say it. Guimont.
Guimont.
Okay, yep. Carefully, if you get it wrong 10 times, she wipes. She breaks and you have to take her in.
Guimont. Guimont. I'm just going to say Guimont. Kelly like, Guimont.
It seems like it would be really nice, but yeah, kind of not.
And René Richie. Richie is not a French name.
No, my grandfather was from Scotland.
Scotland. He's great. He's from Scotland.
Edinburgh.
Maybe except next Richie. Week we're going to make a rocket oven with a big fire tube.
Leo, if people want to follow the ongoing adventures of you trying to extract their stylus, where can they do that?
Oh, Lord above. Lordy, lordy, lordy.
Probably before you buy, right?
I'm going to the AT&T store. Yeah. You know what I could do is...
they're
going to
do something.
One of the fun things you can do with a note is you can stream to YouTube Live, maybe. Oh, but how would I do that? Because what you would see is the guy looking at the thing and going like this. And maybe that'd be kind of fun. I don't know.
This is a great Twitch crossover episode. You can just follow Leo show to show.
You lost a phablet, but you gained content, Leo.
Actually,
in our business, that's a good day.
If you took my advice last week and you downloaded the free Telegram messaging app on your iPhone, your desktop, your everywhere you go, and I do, I'm like the Telegram crazy now. I discovered that they do bots.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bots. There's a trivia bot. I saw you join it, Renee, but you didn't ever message me back.
For some reason, I wasn't getting notifications, so I've turned those on now.
Ah, well, I'll send you a whole bunch of really cool stickers.
I appreciated your sticker, yes.
I have really now downloaded all the best stickers, including the Taylor Swift set.
As a Canadian, I appreciated your Donald Trump exceptionally.
Yes, wasn't that fun? But I've also created the Mechanical Leo, which is a bot, which probably will be a good place to follow my adventures with the stylus in the Galaxy Note 5. If you are on Telegram, it's at Chief Twit Bot. I'm at Chief Twit. That's me. But at Chief Twit Bot. Right now, the Chief Twit Bot will notify you when we go live, when a new show is available for audio for download. And I've just added my Instagram posts. So whenever I post a picture. So I will probably use that in some form or fashion. So if you follow me, if you have Telegram, which is absolutely the best messenger out there. It's encrypted. It's secure. It's free, open source. It works on everywhere, every single platform, desktop, mobile, even Windows Phone. And it's fast. So and the stickers are fun and big. So the Leo bot, the Mechanical Leo, is Chief Twit Bot. And you just kind of get notified periodically. When a new one comes through, there's a lot of interesting bots. There's a trivia game. This is a fun one. This is the image bot. So if I want a, let's say, I'll get a GIF.
Or a Leo Note Stylus bot.
Yeah, wouldn't it be fun? Get GIF. What should I say? Oh, no. And it will search, and it then will send me an animated GIF of, oh, no. there you go. I don't know. You know, it's just something you can do. That's all.
Is that Chad?
It looks like Chad. It
yeah,
does.
I think it is.
No, it's not.
No,
it
I'm
looks
just kidding.
Like
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
It's from GIF Soup.
Vaguely.
Not all bright redheads are the same.
Yes. Come on. Just, you know, they all look the same to me. It's not really animating.
Diced.
There's also an alert bot that you can create alerts, but the trivia bot's fun. You want to do some trivia here? How the hummingbird, bee hummingbird, is the smallest hummingbird in the world. How long is it? I'm going to say 1 centimeter. Wrong. It's actually 5 centimeters. What are the three parts of the nervous system? Neurons, spinal cord, and brain. See, it's fun. And this is a little messenger that'll do all those things and lots more. So, at Chief Twitbot. Andy Yannacco is at the Chicago Sun-Times. You can catch his... Did you publish your MacBook review?
Had a long story, but I do have something else that's equally interesting. I posted the 12 things that I know to be true about all smartwatches after wearing one every day for over a year, and that posted yesterday.
Good. And what is the website for the Chicago Sun-Times?
Go to suntimes.com. It's easier to find my stuff if you are following my Twitter feed, because I will admit openly that the search feature and the organization on the Sun-Times site is not exceptional.
Normal. No.
Please don't complain to me about it. I do not run the website. I simply spend weeks writing a 3,000-word column that I'm very proud of that... I post the link to, knowing that the first 5 things can be, what is the site? The site? What's wrong with the site? What is the site?
At IHNATKO.
Correct.
Really, it's easy if you just remember that the first 3 letters are I have no, and the rest is idea how to spell Anako. I have no. That really was a great mnemonic for me ever since I've been able to spell your name.
I discovered that early on. It's handy.
Yeah. I have no Akko. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We love doing Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv/live. Join us live. You can be in the chat room. You can watch as I screw up my phone. It's so much fun. But if you can't watch live, don't forget on-demand audio and video always available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW or youtube.com/MacBreakWeekly or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. In fact, subscription is the best idea. That way you won't miss an episode. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work, cuz break time is over.